Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station up here on Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, broadcasting on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Coetzee, Stolo, Coquitlam, and other Coast Salish peoples. I'm Jesse, here with you once again after playing you the UFO documentary last week. Back today with another episode, another installment of the World Media in English update from Rumtin, a little bit of music, and an episode of Health Matters about gender-affirming care, which now and always is just a good thing to think about and learn more about. So we're going to get into all of that. I have a variation on the What Did Jesse Find in the Archives, and just a little bit of local music. So we'll start there. Last time I was in the studio, I believe I played a track by Francis Arevalo from his new-ish record, Heat Check. Came out earlier this spring. Very, very good. Really well-produced, well-written hip-hop. Great lyrics, great songwriting. Just all around great. I'm going to see how many times I can say great. Maybe that'll be my word of the day. Anyway, this one, fittingly to start the show, is called Sunrise at Mount Pleasant by Francis Arevalo.
Just don't be a disgrace, okay?
What is this? What is bad? What is good? What good is that? What is my purpose and what is its purpose? What's trying too hard? What is imperfect? What if my work's worthless? What if my worth worthless? What if they draft me on the first version? Am I the third charm or the worst wordsmith? What if my hurt surface? Could I subvert burdens? Oh, my hurt heard this. Got some birds perching. Then my verse worsens. Then I curse my verses. I will verse hurdles and think to urge persons to murmur words early and hurl their worries furthest. I'm on the verge surging. I need a stern talking. I got the nerve. Bobbing. I got a firm offer. What if I earn purses? More so my terms earned them. What if I write his block? I could avert curtains. I will emerge earnest. Could I merge verdicts? I spit that burn sternum. Reflection eternal. What if I tried hard? What if I found God? What if these lines fall flat and my mind's gone? What if my crew loves or hates all of it? Or the world does the opposite? What if my crew loves or hates all of it? Or the world does the opposite? What's living if I ain't getting no peace of mind? Why try if the people won't even see the shine? I've been trying, but at what cost? I guess I'm just a lost cause. What's living if I ain't getting no peace of mind? Why try if the people won't even see the shine? I've been trying, but at what cost? I guess I'm just a lost cause. I see it's all changing now, with bigger stages now. Pussy looking relatively famous, wow. Played for crowds, a couple thou made you a couple thou. Now you call it quits and you go all in, you might double down. Face the doubt, who really knows how this is playing out? What's the point of wealth if you can get yourself, get out of hell? The fame don't feed you, the pain don't need you. The game don't see you, would just tell a peasant to aim for crowns. Now you're waiting on some payments now, when a year ago all you had were dreams and some people would hear you flow. People know your lyrics, at the concerts they sing them loud. Came to make music, is that the reason you're staying down? What, do you need a medal now? And you'll never plan to settle down? Cause no one's at your level now, settle down. One day you'll set it down.
What's living if I ain't getting no peace of mind? Why try if the people won't even see the shine? I've been trying, but at what cost? I guess I'm just a lost cause. What's living if I ain't getting no peace of mind? Why try if the people won't even see the shine? I've been trying, but at what cost? I guess I'm just a lost cause. So what they think they talk about, all they do is talk doubt. You dropped out of college to listen to college dropout. Learning most lessons out the classroom, going on about. Dreaming one day with all the music, it'll help your moms out. Know you're going all out, now you're going all in. And then some, maybe more of the outcomes become income. You can make your mom proud, build fam, a kingdom, a queendom. Now your dreams, they don't even seem dumb. These plans are unreal, they ain't even seen them. So think it up, imagine if ancestors were seeing us. Keep singing the song, spent too long being unsung. Soul was filling empty, hole was greater than some. Knowledge in your dreams, found wisdom in your genes. Found poems in your skin, freedom in your team. When you call it quits, might be the city's best to do it. But don't sweat it for now, somebody's gotta make the music. Don't sweat it for now, somebody's gotta make the music. Don't sweat it for now, somebody's gotta make the music. What's living if I ain't getting no peace of mind? Why try if the people won't even see the shine? I've been trying, but at what cost? I guess I'm just a lost cause. Sorry what I said before, I called to settle scores. I know you metamorphed and I don't wanna meddle more. I don't think I've met a more driven dude with metaphors. From this town I get your sound, I'm headed out, I'll get the door. Listen to your mixtapes, listen more than I'll say. No, you ain't a disgrace, I take it back to I'll say. I hope you eat well, sleep well, get your ass out of retail, you're damn good. Say what's up with me, I hope the fam's good.
Sunrise at Mount Pleasant by Francis Arevalo. You can find his new album Heat Check out wherever you get music. It's really good. I highly recommend it. Also did an episode of my other show, The Vancouver Mixtape, featuring Francis the week before his album came out. You can find that at cgsf.ca. Just go to the Vancouver Mixtape program page. You can also find past episodes of this show in the same place, cgsf.ca. That's our website. That's how it works. Cool. I promised at the beginning of the show that we would be hearing the latest installment of the World Media in English segment with Rumtin. So we're going to do that now. I sat down with Rumtin yesterday afternoon at our remote studio at Maine and Hastings, and we talked about a number of things, some updates to the World Media in English website and social media, and a shutdown in Iran, among some other details. So we'll get into that, and then I'll talk to you afterwards. Enjoy.
Hi, Jesse, and hello to our listeners. Today I have an international news story to talk about, and I also want to talk about our Facebook page, which for now is titled Air, Water, and Economy for Iran, which, as I will explain, we hope to retitle in the future to include a wider range of countries or even to be about the whole world. The international news story I have chosen is Iran's government's decision to shut down the country for 2 weekdays of Wednesday and Thursday last week. As countries don't normally shut down, people may be asking, what does shutdown of a country even mean exactly? Why should it happen, and what would be the consequences? Shutdown of a country, at least in this country, means stopping of all non-essential government operations, and the government here is really big, and shutdown of banks, schools, and all non-essential business activity. It is certainly unusual, and it takes either very unusual circumstances or an unusual government to do it. But which one was the reason here? Unusual circumstances or unusual government? The government itself said the reason was unusual circumstances, namely the record heat that was being experienced all over the world. And they said it made them concerned about health of their citizens. And as far as what international audiences heard, this announcement was what a very small number who may look at headlines from Reuters or New York Times or similar legacy papers heard. Some of these international headlines did mention on the site that the closures may have been aimed at saving electricity too. This part was not in the government's announcement, but it would have been hard to miss, as power cuts are something that the citizens have painfully experienced for a long time. And among Iranians themselves, no one had any doubts that the government was really looking for an excuse to lighten the loads on the grids, so that the Ministry of Energy could at least try to maintain electricity to residential customers. And in fact, this shutdown wouldn't cost the government very much, as according to an internal report on efficiency of their employees that was quoted by an expert guest on media, the government's bureaucrats' productivity during a day-long shift of theirs is roughly equivalent to half an hour of real work. In addition to professional media, the native language social media were also places where experts on the country's living environments and economy commented on this latest face-saving scheme attempted by the regime. Professor Kaveh Madani, a world-renowned environmental scientist, tweeted in Persian, "You could have built hundreds of dams, but without proper management, you will run out of water." The problems of Iran's bankruptcy of water, natural gas, and electricity cannot be solved by administering holidays, just as problems of dust and air pollution weren't solved with holidays. Another citizen tweeted, "Worrying about high temperatures isn't likely to come from a regime that has shot thousands of its citizens dead, refused to import vaccines in a pandemic, and has mounted chemical attacks on schoolgirls. The first power of the region can't produce enough electricity." Of the accusations that this tweet makes, only one, chemical attacks on schoolgirls, hasn't been proven to be the work of the regime. But today, I want to concentrate only on the last one, that it can't produce enough electricity. This country sits on the second largest reserves of natural gas in the world. This regime has built more than 600 dams in the past 30 years, and for 20 years has kept the country's economy under Western sanctions for trying to develop nuclear power energy. And it gives itself titles like superpower of the region. The reason millions of people of this country are living in poverty and without water or electricity is not that this country does not have the natural or human resources to take care of itself. The reason is that this country does not have democracy. This is also the case in many other countries of the world. But democracy will only happen as much as we, the people, make it happen. And it is all very interconnected across borders now, too. That is why national problems are international too now, and that is why we want to get your attention and participation in learning about problems and solutions of sustainable development in all countries of the world. Internet and social media have provided a great means for people to connect worldwide, and we are using a Facebook page as our main way to reach and talk to people about environments and economies. Based on our current translation abilities right now, we are working on Iran, which is in the page title too. But we hope to expand to other countries soon, and you can help too. This Facebook page has got more than 18,000 likes from all over the world already, and based on the response we get from advertising and sharing it, it seems certain that we can reach much higher numbers of likes very soon. This past Sunday, we started a new advertisement in a number of Global South countries, and when I checked the results on Tuesday night, we had added 240 new likes to the page and 28 new shares to the website for a cost of $4. I'm sure a lot of people in the business of social media advertising would find this amazing, but it only shows that people find our content important and something that they care about. We have a YouTube and an Instagram as well, which you can find links on our website. Please join the growing community we are building and stay with us and share your comments and feedback. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks, Ramtin. That's great. the quote about it only being the bureaucrats' full day of work only being actually half an hour.
They hadn't publicized it, but this happened to be someone that was working there. Then he got out of the country under a program called Scholars at Risk. Mm-hmm. Because some university professors, if they're about to be arrested or something, if they can, you know, connect with this NGO, which is called the Scholars at Risk, And somehow, not all of them can, but this guy was able to, you know. And he has had a lot of, you know, he's been inside, like he's been in newspapers, he's been in the government, and he's been teaching in university. Now he's in Norway, and he has a good job in university there, and his family is with him. Nobody can do anything to him. So he goes on media, and what he's saying is not a lie. I mean, this guy is not going to, you know, lie. This is an internal report that they, and of course, they never make these things public.
Well, I mean, that seems to be one of the end products, the common end products of this authoritarian type of regime, is that there's cronyism and there's all sorts of people who have jobs, and there's this really inefficient bureaucracy that is almost nice. Inefficient by design. And
yes, well, I mean, yes, it's partly design, partly the general criticism that anybody would have about a big government, because once the government owns everything, there's no competition and it becomes a bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And it's the case there. I mean, electricity is not done by private companies there. It's the government owns the Minister of Energy, and the Minister of Energy owns all the dams, all the production means. The oil company is not a private company. It's owned by the government. Mm-hmm. And then they do subcontract a lot of their work to, so to speak, or so-called private sector. But this private sector are made of people who have the connections. They're basically people, relatives of these people, or people who are ready to play their games. And that's true. I mean, if you think about it, that's really true even in democracies, but to a much lesser extent. I mean, much lesser extent.
Well, there's a little bit more. The public can act as checks and balances
exactly.
A little bit more.
Exactly. And then when there is real elections, I mean, in democracies, some people, I mean, if you talk to, I mean, I heard it from Ralph Nader, who was calling the U.S. government an oligarchy. But, well, it has some oligarchic characteristics, but it's not an oligarchy compared to, let's say, Iran, you know?
Yeah, there's a scale.
There's a scale, yes. In the U.S., there are checks and balances, which you can't, you know, go that far. So, absolutely. In Iran, it's basically the worst-case scenario. It's 20% of the population who have jobs, economic security, and so on. Although, no, I'm sure even they are not happy in their hearts, because the country is sick. What then? I mean, they call them, there is a very, very hardcore, they call them hardcore of power. They could be not even anything like 5% or something. Those are the people that actually, like, believe in the ideology. If the Ayatollah is telling them something, that's the word of God, you know? Mm-hmm. But those are really very few. The rest of them, and it's not me saying this, it's all commentators and anybody who looks at that government and people who are coming from that country, it's not people from observing from the outside, are saying that within that 20%, still the majority are just people who are, you know, as they say it in the native language, sitting on the table of the revolution. The revolution has given them a table. The table is being filled up with goodies, and they're sitting on it, and they're feeding themselves, and at the cost of other people, you know, which you can see in these shutdowns. Like, a lot of businesses suffer in these shutdowns, and they're not even consulted. You know, the government just decided. It's like I guess in Europe in the Dark Ages, a king would sit down and do, you know, something unusual for the day. Except in those days, life wasn't so interconnected, so that, you know, somebody could make a decision and then bring so many businesses down, you know. The king may have decided unusual things, but here the king makes these unusual decisions on its own, the king being the government, which is actually headed by one person here. And it can affect people really, really drastically. I mean, a lot of businesses lose money. And economically, I mean, you wouldn't believe it. It's like the cost of bread went up since last year. I think it doubled or something. I'm not exactly sure, but it's at least doubled, you know. And that's, people already had difficulty buying bread. And that's the main staple there, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's doubled. But the incomes haven't gone up, you know. And so this shutdown is another story. It was like relief that they gave themselves. They said, oh, look, the world is hitting records, you know, so we can actually say something, you know, give an excuse. You know, we worry about the people, you know.
Yeah, it's very performative, right? Like, there's no action being taken towards an actual long-term solution or anything. It's just oh, hey, look, we did something.
Exactly. And one of the main criticism of the regime is that it hasn't invested in real infrastructure, you know, because it's a country that has a lot of sun, has a lot of natural gas, and they have chosen to actually get the energy from the worst possible ways, which is building dams, which destroys the ecosystem of the country. And it has destroyed, you know, lakes have dried up, rivers have dried up, and they're not having to cut water in even in big cities, which so far they hadn't, you know, been forced to. But right now, this year, we had a lot of cuts. When they announce it, it's really bad. It's like a blanket cut off that they have to announce because you can't hide it. But there are smaller, you know, cuts that they do, which get out by citizen journalists, which they don't even announce, but they're dealing with it. No, I mean, the country economically is heading down a path where a lot of people are saying is not sustainable, even for this regime, you know. So everybody is sitting and waiting what's going to happen. It's a very unpredictable kind of a situation right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you want to make sure we cover?
I should have mentioned that on the events page of our website, we are linking all the audio files of our segments here. These segments, as I think we said in one of our previous programs, are not the actual news items that we want to publish, because that is a bigger process. We have to go by the guidelines and do a review of all the reports that have been provided and create an audio visual, and it's a lot of work. The truth is, we are not people with a lot of money or a lot of network so far or big institutions behind us. We are people just like you. That's why we are coming to you, and we are coming to you in audio because understandably people don't like to sit down and read text, and a lot of our content so far has been text. The reason we are coming to you by audio is to make it more, you know, easier for people to listen to, which you can actually listen when you're working or when you're doing housework and that kind of thing. I listen to a lot of audio when I'm working or I'm doing housework, so it doesn't need to actually take a lot of extra time, but it's a great thing that you would do for social justice and for people that do need help. So again, I just want to appeal to people, there is nobody else that is going to do it. This is a great, you know, project to do, and really it's you people listening, and there is a lot that you can do. You don't need to have really specialized skills to offer to be a professional translator or web designer or social media development expert, nothing like that. It's a lot of it is just networking in your own personal networks, just sharing it in your own personal networks. And there is, if you know any languages other than English, well, you can search in your media in your native language, because a lot is said and communicated in these languages that we just don't hear about. And that's easy. You just need your computer and your knowledge of your native language to sit down and do Google searches, you know, and just bring it to us and share with us, and we can take it from there. It's really easy and even fun. And our Zoom meetings are explained in the events page of our website. And so if you go there, you will see about the Zoom meetings, and also you will have the links to these audio pages, which we encourage you to listen.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, Jesse.
And thank you once again to Ramtin for that update from World Media in English. You can find out more information and listen to past segments by going to worldmediainenglish.org, worldmediainenglish.org. Those past episodes are also listed on cgsf.ca under the Speak Up show program page. Okay. This is more new music from Edzu, who I played a couple weeks ago. I played a 11-minute long-form experimental track for you last week. This one still incorporates lots of different elements and cool things. Much shorter and closer to standard.
Everything is out there if you really want to know.
This is Warrior Song.
All you have to do is...
We can find them if we want to.
Everything is out there if you really want to know the truth.
But why does the Indian Act not have power over us, though? What do you mean by that when you said that?
Because it was never given the authority to have power over us. It just made them believe that it has the power.
Bare my teeth, cut my brains.
why does the Indian Act not have power over us, though? What do you mean by that when you said that?
Because it was never given the authority to have power over us. They just made them believe that it has the power.
Warrior Song by Ed Ziu from the record Potlatch in the Box, which I will reiterate from 2 weeks ago. Definitely go listen to the whole thing. It's so good. Can't recommend it enough. Okay, now a brief segment, a spin on From the Archives. I have less time than I thought I would, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Raymond Scott. I listened to a podcast yesterday and today, half of it yesterday, half of it today, called The Last Archive, and they did an episode about Raymond Scott, who was a hugely prolific composer in the early part of the 20th century, and then got really into inventing and made a music composition machine and a lot of sort of early synthesis and automation work. Then when I came into the studio this morning, there was a folder on the desktop of the computer labeled Raymond Scott for Connor of Bitcoover. He must have done an episode over the last little bit. And so I had to play some. You know, it just seemed the only appropriate move. So what you're hearing in the background is music composed in part by the Electronium, which was the music writing machine that Raymond Scott invented before computers existed. So, very cool. And we're going to listen to as much of this as will fit before we hear the episode of Health Matters about gender-affirming care. And then we'll go to Democracy Now! So, enjoy. This is Electronium Movie Score by Raymond Scott. Thank you.
Hey everyone, welcome to Health Matters. My name is Harris and I'm going to be your host today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know this time of year can be quite hectic for a lot of people, whether you're in school or work. We're kind of nearing the end of 2022 now, so there are a lot of deadlines and assignments and things that need to be done before the year ends. So I appreciate you tuning in. We have a really important topic today, and that is of gender-affirming care. And gender-affirming care is something that is getting a lot of attention in the media now, but I really wanted to raise more and more awareness about some of the challenges that it's facing in terms of healthcare support, access, and resources. And later in the episode, we're very fortunate to be joined by Dr. Seymour, who's a family physician who is really knowledgeable about gender-affirming care and provides some great insight into this topic. But I just wanted to introduce the conversation a little bit and to really highlight some of the issues that the country and the province are facing. For example, in British Columbia, it's estimated that there are about 46,000 people that could use access to some type of medical or surgical care in the form of gender affirmation, but only very few of these people will eventually get the care and treatment that they need. This is because in British Columbia, there is already such an issue with family physicians. Whether you're just a patient looking for a refill on your blood pressure medication, even that can be a bit of a challenge nowadays. And I know the healthcare system is really trying to revamp things, but the point is that even for something that can be done really quickly, like a prescription refill, a lot of people are struggling when it comes to medical care that is a lot more nuanced and more complex in some ways and more deep and requires multiple conversations and a lot of decision making. A family physician that is knowledgeable about this area is really important, and a lot of people are struggling to get somebody that can provide them with that level of care and can walk them through this journey. And so something like gender-affirming care, where a lot of physicians are not too well trained in this area, and that in itself limits the pool of who can help out, I can understand the frustration of a lot of individuals that are seeking this support. And that's why I really felt like this episode was necessary and needed, because the point is to increase our understanding, increase our awareness, and try to provide any type of resources that we can to people that are looking for additional support. And so today I have Dr. Seymour, who I've had the privilege to work with, and she is a phenomenal family physician out in Duncan. And opposed to my typical experience working with family physicians, she really has a focus on gender-affirming care in her practice, and she does a phenomenal job at that. I've seen so many patients in her clinic that are really appreciative of how thoughtful and caring she is and how much attention she pays to even the small details. And that's something that I really took away from my time with her, is that a lot of people are going through many things, and with any type of health decision, there comes a lot of anxiety and stress and even depression, and she's able to look at people in a holistic manner and address not only some of their more medical questions, but also she really looks at the mental health aspect of things and walks patients through that as well. And so we had an amazing conversation that I'm going to play for you right now about gender-affirming care, changes that she would like to see in the healthcare system, and just some tips that she has for anybody listening. And so without further ado, I would like to play you guys the interview that I had with Dr. Seymour. I hope you can take away some of the gems that she had to share. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. I would like to introduce Dr. Patricia Seymour. She's a family physician working in Duncan on the island. I've had the privilege to work with Dr. Seymour last year, and it was such a phenomenal experience. She's exceptionally knowledgeable, very kind, very caring. All of her patients love her. And it was a really good time in Duncan, and I learned a ton. And today we have the honor of Dr. Seymour joining us. And so, Dr. Seymour, thank you so much for coming. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you very much for having me. Well, as you said, yes, I'm a family doctor. I've worked in this community, Duncan, since 2008. I do full-service, full-scope family practice, which includes hospital rounds. And I became interested in gender-affirming care around 2015, 2016, when my child came up to me as transgender. And that was the beginning of a great and evolving education.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was another thing that I was hoping you could speak a little bit more on is what, for the people who are not really familiar with the gender-affirming care, can you explain that and what that entails?
Yeah, gender-affirming care really refers to care for transgender or gender-diverse people, those who have a gender identity that does not align with so-called sex assigned at birth. And so gender-affirming care is a growing specialty that allows people exploring gender to do so in a safe and accepting environment and to access medical and social and legal services. So I would be doing mostly medical, but also a little bit of the social aspect of gender-affirming care.
Right. And what do you think are some of like the challenges that you notice in your practice when it comes to gender-affirming care? I feel like just off the top of my head, I think accessibility would be a big issue. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, accessibility is an issue. Certainly, the reason why I started doing this work was because when my child came out to me as transgender a number of years ago, really the only place that we could access care at the time was, well, the hormone assessments, as they're called, was being provided by only one psychologist in Victoria, and I was not aware of any other assessors at the time. And then the actual hormone treatments were being provided through the gender clinic in Vancouver. So since then, there's been quite an evolution or an increase in the numbers of particularly primary care practitioners who do gender-affirming care, such as myself.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that, which is a great thing, along with that, though, there have been an explosion of numbers as I think younger people start to understand that they are able to come out and to seek help. So access is still a challenge for sure. And I'm about the only one in my area that does this sort of work. So that makes it a little bit challenging.
For sure. And if there is like somebody who's listening or somebody who's thinking about going through that process and they don't know where to start, what do you suggest for them? Like what is like the first step that they can take?
Well, there is an amazing organization called TransCare BC, mm-hmm. and they've got a very comprehensive website. TransCare BC has been functioning for many years, actually, and has been growing in terms of size and influence, and is an organization that really advocates for access and for gender-affirming care. So they can actually help people navigate the system, find family doctors or primary care practitioners who offer primary care to those mm-hmm. who are gender diverse, and also can help them find hormone assessments and surgical assessments. So TransCare BC is an amazing resource. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which is a big mouthful, WPATH, also has incredible information on their website,
right.
and have just published a standards of care, a new edition
mm-hmm.
of the standards of care. So they're excellent. And then for youth, if you visit the Gender Clinic, BC Children's Hospital Gender Clinic, there's an enormous range of resources there as well.
Right.
So that would be a good place to start.
Yeah. And do you still find like it's really difficult with wait times and finding surgeons that can provide this level of care, or has that been something that's improving? What have you noticed is the trend at the moment?
Well, depending on the service that is being sought, yes, the wait times can be long. Surgery wait times, for example, depending on the surgery, for bottom surgeries, as they're called, can be upwards of 18 months to 2 years. Mm. But there, having said that, there is now a surgical center in Vancouver doing bottom surgeries and chest surgeries, and they opened their doors in September of 2019. Prior to that, people had to travel out of country, out of province, in order to access care. So at least the surgical care is now close to home or closer to home, yeah, even though the wait times are long. And chest surgeries, yes, the wait times are long, but compared to those individuals seeking, for example, breast reduction surgeries, which can sometimes take 3 to 4 years to access, access to chest surgeries for trans individuals sometimes as short as 8 to 10 months, and wow, up to 18 months. So right, yes, long wait times, but thanks to the efforts of organizations like TransCare BC and increasing access to services, it's not terrible.
Yeah. And if there are, like, say somebody's in a financial situation where they can afford going a private route, is that an option? Are there places that can do more private type of work for this?
Yeah, absolutely. There are places that can do private surgeries. Mm. Pretty expensive, but there are some people who seek surgeries outside of medical services plan.
And I think one thing that I really noticed when I was in your clinic is there was such a almost hand in hand was challenges with going through the gender affirming care, but also some like of the mental health difficulties that a lot of these patients faced. I saw that you were almost doing both concurrently in almost majority of your patients. Does that sound correct? And I guess I would hoping if you could speak a little bit more on that and like what you've noticed in your clinic and what type of stresses these patients deal with.
Yeah, there's a whole range of mental health issues that that trans and gender diverse people face. I mean, there are many who are thankfully very well adjusted and well supported. And I think that especially for youth, the number one, I would say, indicator or factor that ensures their, their mental health and well-being is the support of their families.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excellent data and some research that came out of Toronto actually that shows how important that is, parental and family supports. But there are many who don't have those supports and have concurrent mental health issues. And yeah, it's of utmost importance that they have the kind of supports that they need in order to, navigate transition and access care.
Yeah. Would you say it's mostly like lack of family support that tends to be one of the biggest stressors for these individuals, or is it bullying at school? Like, what do you think is like, of course it could be a mix of all of them, but what do you think tends to weigh the heaviest?
I think for youth, absolutely. If you compare groups of youth who have supportive, loving families to those who don't, the rates of depression and suicide are far, far, far greater in the group of youth that are not supported. In those that are supported, they are higher for sure, but certainly comparable to their cisgender peers. Yeah. And if you have the support of your family, of course, when you encounter bullying at school, mm-hmm, you've got someone at your back, to support you. But certainly, trans individuals and gender diverse people encounter a lot of discrimination and violence. And that can absolutely contribute to increased rates of suicide for sure. And that's that is still a very real problem, a very big problem.
For sure. And just from, I had a previous episode where we discussed mental health, and one tip I can provide to the listeners is there's a program called Bounce Back through the Canadian Mental Health Association, and that's a free resource that they can use. And it kind of, so they can talk to someone and sort of get back on their feet in terms of mental health support. Is there anything that you tend to recommend to your patients in terms of kind of regaining control over their mental health?
I absolutely would agree with that. For youth that are suffering from mental health issues, but even for those who are generally happy and well adjusted, I always recommend that they connect with a counselor. That's sometimes difficult because counseling is not a service that is covered by our provincial health plan. And we, those of us who do this sort of work, are very hopeful that consideration will be made to funding mental health services for all people, but particularly for youth and those with gender dysphoria. So connecting with a youth counselor, and for adults as well, I think it's so important to have the kind of support from a gender-affirming counselor in order to be able to navigate transition and all of the challenges associated with that.
Absolutely, yeah. And do you think there are, I feel like from what I've seen, universities are trying to make more of an effort in terms of getting more care for like something like counseling. I think they're like increasing the amount of coverage under our health insurance. So that's like, I think, a little bit of a positive change in that direction. Is there anything like for patients that are looking for a fix, like they're really struggling? Do you tend to recommend going down the pharmaceutical route, or do you try to push lifestyle, or is it a merge between both? What would you say?
For mental health, treatment of mental health issues, do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, again, it really depends. I think it would be very dependent on the actual person. Again, for youth, we see a lot of youth with complex mental health issues where medications are definitely required in order to stabilize them. But I always say that nothing can replace or take over for a continuous relationship with a counselor who can offer the kind of safety and support that is really needed. You know, medications are just one small part of supporting a person from the point of view of mental health and social well-being. So yes, it's difficult when you don't have counselors that are actually funded. So yeah, I'm just going to go back to that point.
Definitely. And if you're a loved one or a family member or a friend listening, what would be the best piece of advice you would give them if they know somebody personally who is going through this transitioning period?
Well, I think probably the most important thing is respecting and accepting the person's gender identity as an authentic expression of who they are, and not asking them to explain or account for that. Respecting the name that the person would like to be addressed as. And again, there's an ever growing body of evidence that shows that just using a person's preferred name can be life-saving and can reduce suicide thoughts and gestures by well over 50%. There's lots of good evidence there. And respecting pronouns. So I think those are very basic and very simple first steps that people can take to support someone who is coming out.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great advice. And then I just a little bit left I wanted to ask you about was if you could see one change being made in our healthcare system, it can be in terms of gender affirming care or just healthcare in general, what would you like to be seen be done in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years?
I think I'm going to go back to that mental health piece, yeah, and the need for funding from our government to support support the mental health of our youth and adults. And I mean, gender affirming care and mental health issues amongst that population of people is definitely worth addressing. But in general, I think that is an enormous gap in our healthcare system. So that would be the plea that I would make. I mean, there are lots of other things, of course, that it would be also excellent to see more primary care practitioners, family doctors and nurse practitioners, practicing or adopting, putting themselves out for and doing gender affirming care. Anyone can do a hormone assessment and prescribe hormones, and there are lots of good supports and lots of continuing medical education resources that are provided through TransCare BC as mm-hmm. well as through the College of Family CFPC. So
right.
I would just invite people to get trained up and start doing this very important work.
No, that sounds amazing. I think that would be a really good change that we would hopefully see in the near future. And then just the last question for you, Dr. Seymour. We don't typically or often get physicians on our show. So if we have the opportunity, we'd love to hear one piece of advice that you would like to give in terms of bettering someone's health. If they want to make one little adjustment to their habits, or maybe you've done something, maybe you've included meditation or diet or something, what's one little tidbit people can add to their life?
In general, you mean?
Just yeah, anything. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would say probably in this world and time of increasing social media and demands upon our time and ourselves is to learn how to establish firm boundaries and say no in order to look after yourself and your needs and to be able to spend time with your friends and family, because that's such an important part of health and well-being.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and of finding joy in life.
I agree. I think screens are taking over our lives one screen at a time. So thank you so much, Dr. Seymour. It was such a pleasure to have you. I think we learned a ton about gender-affirming care and just medicine in general, and we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you.
So that was my interview with Dr. Seymour. I always have such an amazing time speaking with her. I learn so much with every conversation that we have. And so I just wanted to share that with the listeners. Hopefully everybody took away something from that conversation, whether it was just a piece of information on how important this topic is and how there are so many changes that need to be made, or maybe you found a resource that you can use for yourself or somebody that you know in your life. And as always, near the end of every episode, we tend to end with a meditation piece. So I'll just get you to try to close your eyes if you're in a comfortable environment, and you can just listen to the music, relax, try to take some deep breaths, and just de-stress from the day. So I'll play the piece right now. And as always, thank you so much for tuning into Health Matters. I hope you took something away from today's episode and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.